There are things out there. Creatures, monsters, ghouls, and spirits. Beings that fall outside the realm of visible truth, beyond the confines of our basic reality. They lurk in the dark, haunt the recesses of our minds, and stir our curiosity in the unusual and weird. They are taboo topics, stories that we tell around the campfire and folklore passed down from our ancestors. We've been taught that these things don't exist, that they are merely myth and legend. Or are they? Welcome to the Occult Archives. I'm your host and spooky librarian, E.M. Moon, but feel free to refer to me as E. Here lies a space beyond all spaces, a library full of arcane information enough to drive any normal person mad. If you can think of it, if you can question it, the archives probably have what you seek. I just want to take a second before we get into tonight's episode to talk about my amazing podcast hosting with Buzzsprout. Buzzsprout is a comprehensive host for podcasts where you are able to seamlessly upload your episodes to all podcasting platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and many more. They also allow you to keep track of all of your analytics in one place. Buzzsprout basically does a lot of the work for you, which really helps a not-so-tech-savvy person like myself. If you're a new podcaster and looking for a good place to host, follow my link in the show notes to visit Buzzsprout. Tonight's story is a bit of a weird one, practically an urban legend of sorts. Even if you've never had an encounter yourself, you probably know someone who has, or at the very least heard a story about them. Black-eyed children. Honestly, just the potential image conjured in your head by the simple description could give one chills. Children are seen as innocent beings, little angels, precious wee godsends that are good as gold, albeit little stinkers at times, but never anything more sinister. Large, round, innocent eyes, dewy cheeks, and a sweet smile. So if you warp that idea and fill those innocent eyes with inky black voids and a temperament that could rival the brattiest, yet wittiest teenager, you have black-eyed children, and encounters with them are more often than not terrifying. The black-eyed children are an American legend of alleged paranormal creatures that resemble kids, generally between the ages of 6 and 16. Most often, they are very pale, with all black eyes, and those who encounter them usually report that the children are seen hitchhiking or panhandling. Some are seemingly distressed at first, and have been chanced upon even on residential doorsteps. Most refer to them as BEK, or black-eyed kids, but as you've heard, I call them black-eyed children instead. The word kid evokes a sense of innocence for me, or a baby goat, depending on the type of person you are. I'm both. And these supposed kids are hardly that. The word children seems more scientific to me, more straightforward at least, based on their appearance alone. They probably deserve a moniker more like horrifying hellspawn, but who really has time to come up with a catchy name when you're still dealing with the trauma from the encounter with said creature? Kid. Whatever. I just don't want anyone to see the word kid and think that these beings are potentially harmless. Because they're not. Though tabloid coverage reported that claims of these creatures go back as far as the 1980s, most other sources state that the legend originated in 1996 with online postings written by a Texas reporter named Brian Bethel on a ghost-related mailing list. I think that's 90s for Reddit, for those of you who may have missed that era. The story related two alleged run-ins with these black-eyed children. Bethel describes an encounter with two such beings in Abilene, Texas, sometime in 1996. He claims that another person had a similar encounter in Portland, Oregon, though it was obviously unrelated. At this point, one would consider the black-eyed children as classic examples of creepypasta, and apparently they gained so much popularity that Bethel had to publish a FAQ just to keep up with the demand for more info about the new urban legend. Bethel went on to tell his story on a TV series called Monsters and Mysteries in America, and ended up writing a follow-up article for the Abilene Reporter News describing his experience, and maintains that it's legitimate. Here is Brian Bethel's story, in his own words, involving his encounter with the black-eyed kids, in the article that he wrote for the Abilene Reporter News in April of 2013. Sometime last year, I was contacted by a television program that wanted to interview me about a strange event that happened a few years ago. With a touch of reluctance, I agreed. The show itself runs tonight at 9 p.m. CST on the Destination America channel. It's a travel program, at least in certain respects. A cameraman and an interviewer came here last year and shot some footage of me and others in a rented home that they used as a backdrop, out and about in Abilene and in a local coffee shop, etc. There is a travel focus, as I said, of a sort. They kept insisting I call this area the Badlands. Having visited the actual Badlands in South Dakota, I protested, but they kept at it, and in the interest of just getting through the experience, I demurred, all the while explaining no one but no one calls this place the Badlands. I think few would disagree that certain parts of Texas, especially dirt roads far away from artificial light under a sliver of silvered moon glow, can be places of both wonder and fear. But our rolling landscape is far from the almost alien-looking landscape of buttes and spires found in South Dakota's Badlands National Park. Being the one interviewed was different. I kept being asked to stop, to repeat certain things with more emphasis or emotion, and to rephrase something to make it more concise or to better coincide with the vision of the kind, but somewhat intense interviewer. The experience was similar too, but in many ways profoundly different from what I do. Despite a few bumps along the way, it ended up being a positive experience. No compensation involved, the only real sacrifice some time to tell and retell in take after take, a single story. You notice that I've kind of dodged the subject matter, and this is somewhat intentional, but we can't go much further without going there. So, here goes. Near as I can figure, this happened in 1996. I've managed to pin down the date that far. I feel like it happened in the spring or summer since I remember wearing a pair of shorts, but one of my great regrets is not recording the actual date of the event. After you hear the story, you'd think it would be something you'd never forget. But given enough time between, not the case. My memory, while good, isn't quite eidetic. I had gone down to the former site of Camelot Communications, one of the area's original internet providers, to pay my bill. At the time, Camelot was located on North First Street, near the movie theater in the shadow of what is now Chase, then Bank One. I was using the light of the theater's marquee to write out my check, which I planned to put in Camelot's night drop slot. Involved in my work, I never heard them approach. There was a knock on my driver's side window. Two young boys, somewhere between 9 to 12 years old, and dressed in hooded pullovers, stood outside. I cracked the window a bit, anticipating a spiel for money, but I was immediately gripped by an incomprehensible, soul-racking fear. I had no idea why. A conversation ensued between one boy, a somewhat suave, olive-skinned, curly-headed young man, and myself. The other, a red-headed, pale-skinned, freckled young man, stayed in the background. The spokesman, as I've come to think of him, told me that he and his companion needed a ride. They wanted to see a movie, Mortal Kombat, but they had left their money at their mother's house. Could I give them a ride? Plausible enough, but all throughout this exchange, the irrational fear continued and grew. I had no reason to be frightened of those two boys, but I was. Terribly. After a bit more conversation, I looked up at the theater marquee and down at the digital clock display in my car. Mortal Kombat's last show of the night had already started. By the time I could have driven the boys anywhere and back, it would have practically been over. All the while, the spokesman uttered assurances. It wouldn't take long. They were just two little kids. They didn't have a gun or anything. The last part was a bit unnerving. I noticed that my hand had strayed toward the lock on my door. I pulled it away, perhaps a bit too violently. In the short time I had broken the gaze of the spokesman, something had changed and my mind exploded in a vortex of all-consuming terror. Both boys stared at me with coal-black eyes. The sort of eyes one sees these days on aliens or bargain basement vampires on late night television. Soulless orbs like two great swaths of starless night. I did what I feel any rational person would do. I full on freaked out inside while trying to appear completely sane and calm. I apologized to the kids. I made whatever excuse came to mind, all of them designed to get me the hell out of there. Fast. The aura of fear was now a palpable black hanging thing, almost as if reality itself was warping around me. I wrapped my hand around the gear shift, threw the car into reverse, and began to roll up the window, apologizing all the while. My fear must have been evident. The boy in the back wore a look of confusion. The spokesman banged sharply on the window as I rolled it up, his words full of anger echoing my mind even today. "We can't come in unless you tell us it's okay. Let us in!" I drove out of the parking lot in blind fear, and I'm surprised I didn't sideswipe a car or two along the way. I stole a quick look in my rearview mirror before peeling out into the night. The boys were gone. Even if they had run, I don't believe there was any place they could have hidden from view that quickly. I write for a lot of reasons. I'd do it even if I didn't get paid to do so. So, I wrote down the story of what had happened, more or less as a cathartic exercise, and shared it with a small group of friends on an email list. From there, it got out into the wider internet and grew and grew and grew. Type my name in Google, you'll find it soon enough. In time, there was a term coined for what I'd seen. BEKs, Black Eyed Kids. I wouldn't have chosen it personally, but it's the acronym the internet knows. I'm pretty easy to track down, and so I still get calls, emails, and inquiries from the public, people all over the world who want to know more about what I saw, what I think they were, and what the encounter means in some cosmic sense. I've been contacted by everyone from Korean television stations planning New Year's Eve shows to regular people who just want to talk. More interesting to me has been sporadic, but more than occasional, contact from people who think they may have seen something similar. Some narratives follow the template of my original encounter a bit too slavishly, and those are easy to dismiss. But others have a more than subtle ring of the same sort of panic and helplessness I felt. Similar experiences have now been in places from suburban neighborhoods to your standard dark alleyways throughout the country, possibly beyond. Kids like the ones I saw have allegedly been seen wandering through certain 24-hour big box retailers in the middle of the night and banging on the front doors of numerous witnesses. Are all of these accounts true? Unlikely. Are there enough to at least reinforce my belief that I encountered something truly strange? Definitely. Since my story leaked out to the wider internet, I've gone through several phases. For a long while, I eagerly answered any and all correspondences about the happening. A few years later, I got tired of answering the same questions over and over and over again, and I read but largely didn't reply to inquiries. But with age and distance from the event, curiosity has had a rebirth. So when a television program called Monsters and Mysteries in America gave me a call asking if they could interview me about that long ago night, I said yes. I've never wanted the Reporter News to be a venue for this story. It's easy enough to find online, as I said, and call it a weakness or maybe common sense, but I prefer to keep my encounters with the paranormal, ask me sometime about the ghost that haunted our newsroom back in college, separate from my award-winning journalism career. But one of the provisions my bosses at the paper made in exchange for me potentially making a fool of myself on TV was for me to tell the story here, and so I have. Do I expect you to believe me blindly? Of course not. I might not believe it myself if I heard such a story from someone else. What did I see? Your guess is literally as good as anyone's. I've had everything from vampires to demons to ghosts to aliens to a somewhat detailed hallucination posited as possibilities. I do feel like I can say this with some authority. This was back in the day when freaky coal black contacts weren't widely available to a couple of kids in Abilene, Texas, for anything under a small fortune. And there wasn't enough time to even put such things on in the short time I broke the spokesman's gaze, if they could afford them. Will I ever know for certain what I saw? Probably not. Do I ever care to see them again? Hell no. As much as I still don't know about what happened that night and why, here's one thing that I do know. It's a gut feeling, but one that rises to a level of almost certainty. If I had given the spokesman and his friend a ride on that long ago evening, I don't think I would be here to type this now. End of story. Now you've heard Bethel's story, the one that started the legend. Let it sink in. Mull it around a bit in your head and really give it some thought. Science writer Sharon A. Hill wasn't able to find any true documentation of black-eyed children encounters, concluding that the tales are probably passed on as friend-of-a-friend ghost stories. Hill considers the legend to resemble typical spooky folklore stories, such as The Phantom Black Dog, where the subject is not supernatural, and there may have been an actual original encounter. But Bethel isn't the only one to have an encounter with these children, and isn't the only one to speak out and tell his story. The accounts vary from witness to witness, but all the same elements are there. Black-eyed children, begging to be let inside or given a ride, and you feel compelled to let them in, even if it's against your better judgment. So if they are real, what the hell are they? Some ghost hunters who consider this to be real phenomena with truth to the sightings suggest that they may be extraterrestrials, vampires, or even ghosts. I myself have a much different theory, but we will get to that in a bit. I want to tell you a few more eerie stories, first-hand accounts involving the black-eyed children. I searched around for supposed actual encounters from people, and since this is a newer subject, the internet seemed like a good place to start. I found these on Thought Catalog, and I'm only going to read a few, but I will share the link with you in the notes and let you fall down the rabbit hole on your own. Apparently, the person who wrote the article pulled 16 stories straight from Reddit. I'm only going to frighten you with two. Bear in mind that I am reading these straight from those that authored it, so if I trip over my words, I apologize. But let's go ahead and start with a story titled Halloween, submitted by user SarahBeth11. This is so funny. I'd never heard of BEKs before my incident, so I come on here to post my story, and the first story I see is about BEK. Weird. Let me preface this by saying I'm by no means a writer, just a domestic engineer living in North Texas. Also, I don't believe in the paranormal, ghosts, demons, aliens, whatever. However, I did have an event happen to me this Halloween I have to admit has me scratching my head. This is my first post on Reddit, and sorry to say, I'd never even heard about it until yesterday. I told my best friend about my incident, and she's an avid reader of No Sleep, and she told me if I didn't post it, she would. So here I am. Anyway, hope you like. So it had been a slow trick-or-treat night in our neighborhood that evening, which is pretty odd in itself. We usually have kids from different areas dropped off in ours, and have a constant parade at our door. That night, I'd say we'd had no more than 8 or 10 groups of kids come by the entire night. It was about 9:30 p.m., and my husband and I were sitting in our family room watching some of those ghost shows based on supposedly actual events. Like I said, I don't believe in that stuff, but I do like a good ghost story now and then, and it was Halloween and all. We hadn't any activity at the door in over half an hour, and it was getting late, so we decided to turn the porch light off and let our dog Chloe out of her crate. Chloe is an American Bulldog and is very docile. We only put her in her crate because we were afraid she'd try and get out to go play with all the kids, and I didn't want to have to chase after her down the street. Also, we didn't want her to scare any of the kids because she would look a little intimidating to the younger ones. So, I turned the outside light off, let Chloe out, and she followed me back to the couch and lay down at my feet. It was getting close to 10 p.m. when my husband decided he'd had enough fun for the night and was going to go upstairs, take a shower, and get ready for bed. After all, it was Thursday, and he still had to get up early the next day. My teenage son was out with his friends at a local haunted house and wasn't expected back for another hour or so, so that left me alone on the couch with Chloe. Now, just because I don't believe doesn't mean that those shows don't freak me out a bit, and being alone now, watching, I'd have to say I was kind of on edge, as it were. It wasn't long after I heard the upstairs water for the shower turn on when there came a light knock, knock, knock at the front door. My initial reaction was, "What the hell, really? It's almost 10, go home." But soon an uneasy feeling came over me. Why the knock? Our doorbell glows in the dark, and without the porch light, it would be extra obvious to anyone there. I paused. I couldn't really just ignore it. Our front door has a big beveled glass panel, and anybody right at the door could see in enough to see someone was in the family room watching TV. It would be pretty rude for me to just sit there and not answer it. Knock, 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 again from the door. I glanced down at Chloe, and she was gone. My gaze followed her usual path to the front door, expecting her to be on her way there, as she normally does. Nothing. She wasn't there. I stood up to look around the room better and found her crouching by the back door like she was wanting out. However, she never asked to go out like that. She always comes and licks my hand or puts her head on my knee. This was totally out of character for her, and I have to say heightened my anxiety. "Chloe Crate," I said. She turned back to look at me like, "Hell no, lady, ain't moving." I yelled up to my husband, but if he was already in the shower, I knew there was no chance of him hearing me. Knock, knock, knock. About that time, a car drove down our street and cast just enough light on the door to where I could see the silhouette of two small children through the glass. I instantly felt relief. It was just some kids, probably a couple of my neighbors on their way back home that wanted to stop by and show me their costumes or something. I headed to the door and looked back to make sure Chloe wasn't going to follow. What a great watchdog, I thought to myself as she just sat there. I turned on the porch light when I got to the door, and sure enough, I could see through the glass that it was a couple of pretty small kids. A little late for such young ones, I thought, and I began to wonder about what kind of parent would let their kids run the streets that late at night. I only opened the door enough to where I could block Chloe's escape if she decided to grow some balls, which was only about 2 feet. What struck me immediately as odd was the kids weren't wearing any costumes. They were in normal street clothes. Also, no customary trick-or-treat, either. I began to feel very uneasy again. It was a girl and a boy. The girl to my left was older, I'd say about 11 or 12. I could tell she was blonde, but I couldn't make out any distinct features, as our lights are from high above and on columns at the front porch, so most of the light was coming from behind them. I had not opened the door wide enough for any light from inside to hit them directly. The boy was younger and about a foot shorter, I'd say 8 or 9, and looked to have light brown hair. The girl politely spoke up. "Ma'am, can we please come inside and use your phone to call our mom?" As she spoke, something in the pit of my stomach was telling me something was wrong. What kid, even at that age, doesn't have a cell phone of their own these days? I couldn't remember the last time I'd had anybody ask to use my home phone. Hun, don't you have a phone of your own that you can call your mom on?" I asked. This was where things really got weird. Both kids turned to look at one another like they were going to say something to each other, but neither ever spoke. They both turned back to me, and the girl said, "Ma'am, my cell phone battery doesn't have any charge left in it. Can we please come inside and call our mother? We're alone out here, and my brother is scared." I have to admit, there were two competing feelings going on inside me. The first, that of a mother's heart that wanted to help these two small children get to their mom. The other, a sinking fear in my gut that was keeping the other feeling at bay. It was then that I noticed during the short conversation I'd already opened the door a few extra inches, which I was completely unaware of doing. I stopped. "Honey, why don't you give me your mother's number and I can call her myself?" Another pause, and they again looked at one another. After a short moment, they turned back to me, and the girl said, "Ma'am, my little brother has to use your bathroom. Can we please come inside while you call our mom?" And with that last statement, the little girl moved closer to the door, like she was going to just walk on in by me. As she did, she stepped into the light coming from inside the house, and I got my first real good look at her. Solid, jet black eyes. That's all I could see. That motherly instinct was gone and replaced by terror I don't think I've ever felt in my life. I could feel every hair on my arms and back of my neck standing at attention. I closed the door to where just my face was able to stick out. The little girl stopped and again pleaded. "Please, ma'am, we're really scared and alone out here. We have to come inside. Please help us." Then, like on cue, both kids began to whimper and cry. That's when the fear took over and I shut and locked the door. "I'll call your mommy if you give me the number," I shouted through the door, "but I'm not letting you in my house." I could still see them standing there on the porch, just staring at me through the beveled glass pane. Part of me wanted to run upstairs to my husband, but the bigger part didn't want to lose track of where they were. That would have freaked me out even more to not know where they were. After what seemed like forever, but probably only a few seconds, I decided I'd call my neighbor who lives across the street. As I made my way to the side table by our couch to my phone, I glanced at the back door. Chloe was nowhere to be found. We later found her in the guest room under the bed. When I got to my phone and started to look for his contact info, it was only then that the kids stepped away from the door and began to walk to the street. As they did, I walked to the door and got a better look to see where they had went, still not calling my neighbor. If you get close enough to the glass, you can see out enough to make out people's shapes, but you can't see much detail. Of course, standing that close to the door would make you pretty obvious to anyone outside looking in. From the door, I could see that the kids were still standing under the street lamp nearest my house, staring at me. As I lifted the phone to my ear after calling, only then did the kids start walking down our street. I met my neighbor out under the lamp once he was out there, but the kids were nowhere to be seen. Like I said, I don't believe in any of this stuff and had never even heard about black-eyed kids before talking to my friend. What I have to think, is these kids were just out yanking people's chains on Halloween night. But I will say this for them. They were good. Really good at it. They scared the shit out of me and my dog. This next story from In the Labyrinth was titled, "Don't Go Out at Night and Always Beware the Devils." Reading the stories, I had always been a skeptic. Stories, alleged first-hand experiences, hauntings, possessions. They're all well and good for a quick chill, a cheap thrill, something I read to get my heart rate up. Getting scared can be fun sometimes, as long as you don't overdo it. Just a little something silly to get worked up about. In my lurking in books and on numerous sites on the internet, credible or not, I have come across many a story or account about ghosts, demons, the Jersey Devil, you name it. Recently, I have found my way into stories about the BEK, or black-eyed kids. No, these children did not get a black eye from a fight. I don't believe that there would be a soul out there with the backbone to try and attack these kids. No, BEKs are kids, if that was not straightforward enough, usually from all the accounts I have read, in their teenage years, if they even physically age at all. Their eyes are pitch black, no pupils, no corneas, no white showing at all, pitch black. They have olive skin and wear run-of-the-mill clothing, as in hoodies. However, in a non-physical sense, they always bring with them an overwhelming sense of fear and dread. They are intriguing, and when approached by them, again from all the accounts I've come across, it's like you're in a slight hypnosis, though you quickly snap out of it when your instincts take over. usually as you meet their eyes. Then there are the theories. The theories about what these BEKs may be. These theories range from lost souls to alien-human hybrids, and even to vampires, though the latter may be an extreme stretch to link the BEK to the current social infatuation of vampires found commonly in young persons. In the light of all of this, I have always been a very fact-based person. If its existence was not apparent, or the existence of the thing in question was not testable and verifiable, to me it did not exist. However, one night, one long, terrifying night, which still haunts me to this very day, showed me the proof required to open my eyes and mind. My story begins when I left my mom's house. I had gone over to visit because my father, her husband of 63 years, recently passed away, and Mom wasn't taking it too well. I knew she needed support from her loved ones, and I was more than willing to go visit and keep her company, but it was getting late. My mom lives in the suburbs. Tidy lawns, plenty of neighbors, paved roads, and even though it was near 11 p.m. when I left, the streets were extremely well lit by the streetlights, who always had your safety and ease of mind at heart. These lights only lit the road, though, and glancing across the street, the houses were cast in an eerie shadow. Even a rather safe, charming little neighborhood can seem spooky and uninviting when cast in shadow. I admit, I was terribly chilled. Sliding into my car, I revved the engine and waved to my mother, who was standing in the doorway, wrapped comfortably in a warm shawl. She waved back, her old and fragile arm shaking. I saw her mouth, "Be careful," and I smiled, backing out of the driveway. I turned out of the neighborhood, deciding to take the back way, the shorter way, home tonight. In hindsight, that might not have been a good idea. I live a significant ways away, out in the middle of the country in the old farmhouse I grew up in, which my father had left in my name when he and Mom had moved out, into a smaller place, more easy to care for and affordable, and social. He, my father, had always told me growing up, "Don't go out at night and always beware the devils." He was a strong believer in anything and everything paranormal, a very superstitious man, and I always had to resist the urge to laugh at his words, but I knew he meant well. Driving down the dark country roads, there were no streetlights, and the half-assed paved road was cracked and filled with potholes. The fields on either side of the road were empty, just blank stretches of overgrown grass and untended shrubbery. The dark outline of the trees of the woods could be seen looming all the way across the fields in the shadowy horizon. One might have even seen a deer or two once in a while in those fields, but not tonight. The moon offered little light as the sky rolled with dark, threatening clouds, ready to burst with rain or a storm at any moment. Sure enough, a few moments later, the low grumble of thunder sounded, heavy and long. However, no rain fell just yet, much to my pleasure. I hate driving at night, and in the rain, and putting those two together would end badly. I just knew it. Accompanied only by the occasional roll of thunder, I started to feel a bit anxious. I can't explain it, I just felt shaken up, probably because it was night and it would start raining any minute. Or maybe I had been reading too many ghost stories and legends, and tonight seemed to reflect the mood of the stories I read almost obsessively. To try and calm myself, I flicked on my old car's radio and turned the old-fashioned knob back and forth, slowing down a bit as I attempted to find a station that came in clearly. Nothing doing. Weird. There was a broadcasting tower right near here. It usually came in perfectly clear. Just clear as day. But still nothing. The white noise and static of the blank stations was doing nothing to appease my anxiety. I gripped the steering wheel tightly as more thunder boomed from the sky. Aggravated, I forcefully shut off the radio, gritting my teeth. Glancing down at the dashboard, I noticed I was nearly out of gas. Groaning, I searched the road for a sign for gas. As I was scanning the side of the road, I noticed from the corner of my eye two figures walking on the side of the road, shrouded in shadow. They were walking slowly. One turned around, walking backwards, his or her thumb sticking out. I felt compelled to pull over, give them a ride, and I found my hand turning the wheel slightly, but I pulled back, realizing how stupid it would be of me to accept two random strangers into my car in the middle of the night on a backcountry road. I sped up and passed them, trying not to look at them as I did so, though I felt oddly intrigued by them. As I focused on the road ahead, it started drizzling, dropping my mood another level or two. Along with the rain, the thunder seemed louder, closer, as the storm moved in. A few seconds passed until I gave in to my compulsion to look at the two figures, and I glanced in my rearview mirror. It seemed as if the two were walking faster, and the one no longer had his thumb out, but it had to be my imagination. How would I be able to tell if they were walking faster or not? It was rainy and dark. Looking back at the road, I almost missed a sign that alerted me of a gas stop up ahead. A sigh of relief passed my lips and I slowed down, looking for any indication of the stop, pushing the thought of the two figures from my head. Soon I was pulling into the gas station slowly as the rain started to pick up. The store was closed, but luckily they had a 24-hour gas pump service. That was good for me, as if they had not, I'd have run out a few more miles down the road. I shut off my car and hesitantly shuffled out of the metal shell and glanced over my shoulder, still not being able to shake that nervous feeling that had manifested inside me earlier that night. I stood under the light of the overhang, trying to figure out how to work the pump, which seemed so overcomplicated in the dim light, and with my mind not being able to focus on this simple task. The rain picked up more, heavier and louder against the concrete of the gas stop as I finally was able to get the pump into my car, forcing my hand to stop shaking. I had a horrible feeling that my shaking wasn't just because of the bitterly cold night air. Suddenly, the overhang lights of the gas stop started flickering wildly, a couple going out altogether. It seemed as if the temperature dropped 20 degrees in a few seconds. As I glanced around, a sinking feeling started to blossom in my stomach. As if in slow motion, I turned around, facing back towards the road, the long, lonely road, and saw what I had expected to see there. But even as much as I knew what I'd see, I still felt the drop of my stomach, the color draining from my face, and I breathed a sharp, cold breath, forcefully, as it almost caught into my throat. Across the street, the two figures were standing, facing me. They started crossing the street slowly but surely, and I fumbled with the gas pump. It had only been a few moments, but it seemed as if the gas pump was taking its precious time. I was shaking hard now, as thunder boomed once more, and I looked back up. The figures were now at the entrance to the gas stop, and my breath was quick and shallow as I blindly shoved the pump back into its holder, not being able to tear my eyes away from the figures. As they drew closer, I became more frantic, even though, now as they walked into the flickering light of the overhang, I saw that they were just two teenagers. They looked ragged and frigid and soaked from the rain. I straightened up a bit, still terrified, but another compulsive feeling similar to the one I had experienced in the car was bubbling, and I felt obligated to talk to these two, though I insisted to myself to just drive away, not to risk anything. They were extremely close now, at the next pump when I slid into my car, shaking wildly and fumbled for my keys, cursing myself as I dropped them on the floor. Leaning down, I swiped them up and sat back up, a cold, sickening feeling as I came face to face with one of the teens, who had his hand on my window, knocking slowly but forcefully. I rolled the window down a bit, just a bit, no bigger than to allow a small child's hand through, but before I spoke, he spoke first. The other figure standing in the background, still, but I could see something of a grin there on her pale face. "Can you give us a ride into town? We missed the bus and don't have a ride." He spoke slow, and something about his voice made me shiver. A cold chill swept down my spine and I opened my mouth, but no sound came out. Clearing my throat, I glanced at the dashboard and at the keys in my hand. "I'm sorry, but I'm not going into town," I stuttered, keeping my eyes down. Not at the kids. However, the teenager knocked harsher and made me jump a little as he insisted another time for a ride. I told him no once more and looked up, trying to seem intimidating, which seemed silly, trying to seem intimidating to a child, but a horrible, chilling sight greeted me. I looked the kid right in the eyes and gasped sharply, my back hitting my seat as I went to back away. He had eyes, oh he did, but they were blacker than the night, pitch black. No discernible pupils, and no white whatsoever showing. Pure black. Deep. Brooding. And surprisingly intriguing, but my fear got the better of me, and I quickly turned the key and my engine revved to life. I thanked God, which I had never, ever done before tonight. My car had not stalled, and went to pull away as the kid banged on my window with a pale fist, screaming for a ride. I took off speedily down the road, apologizing to my father again and again for laughing at him, never taking his warning seriously. After a few more minutes, I pulled into my driveway and right into my lawn in front of my porch. I didn't want to spend any more time outside than I already had and jumped from the car, leaving the car door open, and ran inside, slamming the door and locking it, even going as far as to put a chair in front of the door in case someone or something tried to get in. Sinking into the chair in front of the door, I shivered uncontrollably and started to cry. Hiding my face in my hands as two dark figures stood at the end of my driveway.
"Ooh, did the temperature just drop in here?"
Two different stories from two different people, seemingly far, far away from one another. Like Bethel pointed out, some of these stories have that inkling of truth, of believability,
while others seem to close to his own initial encounter and sound more like fabricated fiction. Now, that was only a couple tales of BEK encounters, and based on just these few, there seems to be a commonality between them. Besides the age range and black eyes, there is always the feeling of intense dread, fear, or visceral responses of unknown origin. Just being in the proximity of these supposed children elicits a fight-or-flight response. Their conversation seems to be limited to, "Can you let us in?" and "Can we use your phone?" usually in the guise of needing a ride or being alone, and the need to use the phone so they can call their parents. Even though most kids these days have cell phones, which is another cue that something is up with these children. People who have encounters with them feel compelled, as if by an unseen force, to let them in, and they have to fight their reaction to do so, even though they look like children. Something in their gut tells them that they aren't. It's always about letting the kids in, the kids that don't act like kids, kids who speak in a slow, monotone way, whose eyes are black as pitch, who have a desperate need to enter your space. What are they? Like I stated, speculation is ghosts, demons, possibly aliens, but I have another theory that may or may not have been mentioned anywhere. A theory that may sound silly to some and not at all frightening. Fairies. Not Tinkerbell or Navi. No, something much darker and far less cute. Ever heard of changelings? Changelings were said to be fairy children swapped for a human child that was then stolen away by the Fae. The fairy child or changeling was typically identified by a number of strange traits according to Irish folklore. They may appear sickly or have stunted growth, some even claiming that they possessed very notable characteristics such as a beard or long teeth. They may also display intelligence far beyond their years as well as keen sight. While some aspects of this description don't really pertain to how people describe the BEK or black-eyed kids as we know them now, that doesn't mean that folklore doesn't evolve with the time. They may not have full-grown beards or rodent-like teeth, but maybe those traits have been replaced with the less obvious black eyes. Less obvious. But if they are Fae in origin, what is their endgame with trying to gain access to a residence or a vehicle, and why can't they enter on their own? I don't know of many stories regarding the Fae where they had to be invited in. In my experience, they go wherever they damn well please, with or without permission. But what about Fae vampires? There is a figure in Scottish folklore called, I'm probably going to screw this up, the Bábhanshí. Folklore describes the Bábhanshí as usually appearing like a beautiful young woman wearing a long green dress that conceals the deer hooves she has instead of feet. Like other vampires that we know of in fiction and folklore, she drinks the blood of humans and will vanish before the sun rises. She is also said to take the form of a hooded crow or raven. Not exactly a bat, but like I said, stories change. Other plausible theories about the black-eyed kids, like extraterrestrials, ghostly specters, and demonic children, could just as well be truth, if this phenomena is a real thing at all. It started as a story on an old-school internet forum, and once people got wind of the story, it exploded with more and more individuals coming forward with their own stories and encounters. This is not to say that the initial encounter that Bethel had was fabricated. I very much believe that he did encounter some sort of supernatural beings. But like he said himself, there are a lot of obvious fakes out there. But here's the thing that I say all the time when it comes to creepypasta-type fictional characters. Even if they were just a figment of someone's imagination to start, once you begin creating folklore and giving history to characters such as these, they have a capability of becoming real. Think of the Tibetan Tolpa, a thought form. Put enough energy into something and it comes to life. Anyone remember the season one episode of Supernatural titled Hell House, where the boys investigate an urban legend ghost story of a spirit who murders unsuspecting teens just like he murdered his family? Turns out the story was entirely fabricated by a couple teens in town, put on the Hellhound's Lair forum, and the story began to evolve, change. And with the possibly millions of people believing in the story, you got yourself a murderous ghost tulpa. You make it real because you believe in it. Remember Tinkerbell and Peter Pan? I do believe in fairies. I do. Belief is a huge part of the equation in situations like these. There is also the possibility that other entities or energetic beings have caught wind of the story and decided to use the BEK as a costume to do whatever it is that they do. Or maybe the black-eyed children are a real thing in their own right, and the majority of stories that we hear are very real encounters and not just some made-up tale to scare the shit out of people. We probably won't ever know, and that is part of what makes these beings so terrifying. You never know if you could possibly run into them. And then what? Will you be strong enough to resist the control that they apparently have over people? Will you lose the ability to think for yourself in the moment of fear, frozen in terror? Will you let them in? Please let us in. I should hope not. It's okay to take precautions. Iron, holy relics, blessed water, salt. You never know what sort of characters you may run into where any other sort of weapon won't help you. Just remember to always lock your doors and make sure that you're on the right side of the lock. Tell me, have any of you ever come face to face with these terrifying children? If you have, send us your stories. You can find the submission form on my website under the Occult Archives tab. Thank you all so much for listening, and make sure to visit me in November as I dig up more stories to chill you, thrill you, and maybe make you learn a thing or two. Shout out to my Patreon subscribers who just upgraded to my new Occult Archives library card tier, Jessica Washburn, Marina Bickford, and Dee Brady. You lovely folks warm my cold heart with your continual support and excitement for the podcast. If you'd like to become a patron for the podcast, you can find the link on my Buzzsprout page. You can become an archive benefactor, and for just $5 a month, you receive benefactor acknowledgement after you join the tier. This is a shout out of goblin love from me on one of my episodes, and sneak peeks of happenings in the archives before anyone else. At our $10 tier for the Occult Archives library card, you receive a shout-out after you join, future monthly AMAs on Discord once we get more patrons on that tier, and access to bonus episodes that no one else will ever get to hear. Till October 31st, if you sign up for the library card tier, you will get a bonus key pen to the archives to take notes with, doodle, or even write your own spells. But that's enough rambling from me tonight, folks. If you want to hear more from me this month, join my library card tier on Patreon to get access to my exclusive spooky story hour with the archives, where I will be reading stories from the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark anthology and maybe a few iconic tales from Edgar Allan Poe. Until then, lock your doors, salt your windows, and remember, it's okay to sleep with the light on. Theme music for the Occult Archives by Junkfood2121. Background music by Purple Planet Music, and other sound effects by Zapsplat, Tom Bombadil 1988, Jay Michelson, and Blue Delta.